Okay, GarageBand's happening. And I'm the PowerPoint for today. Which is critiquing research reports. Okay, what does it mean to critique a research report? Any idea? You get to judge, finally. We've gone this whole semester, and I hope that you have the whole semester, all of 5 weeks, right? It seems like 5 weeks. So that you would hopefully gain some knowledge into what it is, what is quality research. We've gone through each of the steps, which are the main sections in a research report. So that hopefully you have gained the ability to critique, to see what's good research and what's bad. So critiquing involves identifying the merits of the work. What's good? What's a merit? What's good about this? The meaningfulness. How meaningful is it? Is it meaningful to practice? Is it not? Is it interesting but something I would never use or never work in my practice because it costs too much money or clinically is impossible? And the significance. How significant is it? Is this going to really revolutionize the way we the way we do pick line dressing changes? You know, is this really going to decrease the infection rates? The what's it called? The meter dose inhaler. The thing you suck in with it. Incentive spirometer. Yay! See, I forgot already. The incentive spirometer. I mean, that was revolutionary, right? I mean, that really was. That had a huge significance. So it would be very interesting to have read some of the initial research on that when they were the trials of the incentive spirometer. That would be fascinating. Huge significance on nursing and patient care. And what about limitations? What were the limitations of this work? Granted, it was qualitative study only done with 3 case studies, but the significance and the insight gained from those 3 people may have been significant, but the limitations were there were only 3 people and they were isolated to this one area. Okay, so you're going to find strengths and weaknesses in all reports. And then by weighing the strength and the weaknesses, you'll determine the overall applicability of the findings. Are the findings applicable to your practice? And that's the bottom line, are they? So I truly hope that you've developed those skills. That's the goal. And that's what you're gonna show us, all of us, on Friday, most of you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why do you think that ended?
It was interesting. That is how they originally did it this is an old PowerPoint, you can see it's dated 2006. I've given this course, this is my 17th time. So some of my stuff is old and I recycle it. That was how they originally did it when I got my BS, my MSN. It was a Master of Science, and then... Yeah, and since then, kind of the parentheses have fallen out of favor. And nobody uses them anymore. But at that point, they were using them. Good question, yeah. Because you're right. I don't use it anymore. Nobody uses it anymore. I guess it was maybe... I don't know why. Because it's different than a nurse practitioner. I mean, it's a... It's an academic degree. So I don't know if that made it more of a... So what's our expectation? You're expected to participate in research activities. Okay? As BSN prepared nurses, I expect you to do that. I expect you are expected, by virtue of being an educated nurse, to evaluate and interpret research reports for their applicability to nursing practice. Are they appropriate? Look at the adequacy of findings. You may very well sit on a review board that does just that for your floor, your hospital, your clinic. You are very prepared to do that now, more prepared than the vast majority of nurses. So if the opportunity presents itself, I hope that you will have the confidence to step forward and take that kind of position. Usually they're just extra little, you know, things that you get rounded points for in your job, committee work. But it's all important. And please feel confident in doing that and know that you're ready for that. Please remember that just because a report is published doesn't guarantee a darn thing, right? I hope that you've come across some poor reports. We haven't had a lot of time to talk this summer. And I haven't had a lot of time to look at what you've pulled up. All of what I've seen has been great. I haven't seen anything real crummy. But I hope that you have come across some poorly done report so that you can see, I wouldn't have anything to I'm not going to believe anything they say. The methods are wrong. They're not even talking about what, they're not even looking at what they said they were supposed to do. And the findings sound real crazy. Look at all the bias. And, you know, I hope you found some things that you really never want to use. Just because it's published does not guarantee quality, value, or any kind of worth. Doesn't mean a darn thing. What you have to do is critique it. And failure to critique a research report adequately may adversely affect the outcomes of entire populations of patients. Very well could. You could come across one article that you thought was just great. You could then convince your institution to adopt this policy, and it could be completely wrong. It could cause infection rather than prevent it. I told you about the covering the PICC lines where I work. Mm-hmm. I'm still thinking that covering them with those 2x2s is bad. You know, I just think it's so bad. I'd love to read some research on it. But they're still doing it, so the infection rates must have gone down. But I think just fiddling with them more is causing problems. But anyway, but that kind of thing, look, I could affect that whole population. That decision by that one physician has affected that whole population. I don't think it's done any harm, but it sure could have. And maybe it is. I really don't know. One thing it's not doing is making them adopt the wonderful little things that Marin General has now that have the antibiotics in them and the little caplets. So it is, because they haven't gone further and looked. And there's much better ways to do what they're doing. So it's strengths and weaknesses, right? It's a critical appraisal. You're going to be critical, and that's your job. You're going to be critical. And you're also going to praise the strengths and be critical of the weaknesses. So you look at the title. It's going to go through the parts that you're going to critique. Does the title accurately describe the study? Sometimes we have these really sexy titles that sound wonderful. Nursing student depression. Well, it doesn't say a darn thing about how many nursing students, where it was conducted, or anything. Right? Nursing students are depressed. Well, yeah, I'd like to read that. That sounds interesting. It doesn't describe what kind of study it is. Nursing students and depression, yeah, that's major variables. Have no idea about the population. Are we talking about graduate-level nursing students? Are we talking about associate degree? What are we talking about? It doesn't tell us a darn thing. And that's why the titles sometimes are so, they're just really not approachable. They're not fun titles. They're boring, long titles, right? And they're not fun. And they don't necessarily entice you to read the article. But they do describe the study, the major variables in the population, which is what a title should do. We're not writing novels here in nursing research. We're not writing fun little informative articles. We're reporting on research. So the title shouldn't be cute and fun. It should be descriptive. And that's about it. What about the problem statement? Very clearly stated. Should give some pertinent background to the problem. And it should go on to say why the study is being done. It's justifying the study. It creates an argument for the importance of the study. Remember, when you wrote problem statements, you said, why is it, well, I encouraged you to say, why is this important, and to defend it. This is a thesis part of the proposal. Why is this important? You make an argument, and you defend it. Is it significant to nursing? That's always absolutely vital in nursing. Everything comes back to bedside. We talked about that in our very first class. I believe we're the only discipline that has this wonderful circular modality. Everything comes back. Everyone is focused on improving care at bedside. And is a problem researchable? Are they just out, like the spirituality? There's been some research on nursing and spirituality. How researchable is that? That's a little dicey, isn't it? You could, there have been studies that have designed that have done a pretty good job, but that's something that, is it researchable? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Is there a conceptual framework model identified? We talked about conceptual frameworks in theory. Is it implied? Okay. Maybe. If so, is it clearly developed? And do they apply the work to it so we know what they're talking about? Or is it just kind of hanging out there all by itself so that the research can get funding? Okay. Is it applicable? Does it make sense? And now since you've written literature reviews, I hope you're very good at critiquing the review of the literature. Review of the literature should be embedded in the introduction section of a research report, right? And it should definitely frame the topic of the research in the current science. So do they cite and review current research? Is it critical? Okay. Are there classic citations as well as current? So did they go back and get the classic work? Do they also include opposing studies, people with different views possibly than their findings? Can you follow it logically? Are there subheadings? If so, are they appropriate? Primary sources. You remember what primary sources are, right? Not secondary. I'm noticing your reviews, a couple of you are using secondary sources, something I apparently didn't stress enough. Primary sources are information from that author. Secondary sources are you're reading a research report and that author cited the CDC, for instance, you can't make a statement from the CDC and cite that author. That's secondary. You have to go back and find the original CDC report and cite that. Okay, you can't go citing secondary. That's very rarely is that acceptable. I use my example of something that can get translated as a secondary that I've been able to sneak by because I'm lazy. But generally, secondary citations are not acceptable. Summary at the end of the review. Do they pull it all together? Let's hope so. Okay. It should be well written. Research reports should be well written, and they should be written so that you can read them as bedside nurses. You, right now, should have no problem reading it. What about the purpose? It should say the purpose of this study or the purpose of this project is to... The purpose is, it should be extremely clear, a declarative statement. It could be a question or a hypothesis, is to explore the question of whatever, or to support the hypothesis. Never prove, to support. Okay, to support the hypothesis. Right? So the purpose should be very clear, too. The research question clearly stated. Okay, the next section will be your hypothesis and question. Very clear again. Absolute. You should know exactly what they're looking at. At this point, all the operational definitions and variables should be stated. This is what we're looking at. Dependent, the dependent variable. Operational definitions, remember what those are. What is a child? What is a nurse? Okay, what is a nurse? That's an extremely general word, isn't it? I mean, there are many people that are completely untrained that consider themselves nurses. And so do I, actually, with no formal education whatsoever. No, versus a PhD researcher who is also a nurse, hasn't been at bedside maybe for 25 years, but is still a nurse. So what are you talking about? What is a nurse, for instance? What's a child? Is it clear? Are they clear on what kind of research design it is? It's a retrospective, cross-sectional chart analysis. Very clear as a design, clearly identified. And do you think it's a good design for the study? Is it a good design in looking at these variables and answering these questions? You know enough about design. You can decide, wow, I really prefer this to be a qualitative work rather than a quantitative work. They're having a horrible time pulling this data. It would have been nice to just talk to some people and get their ideas. And you can make that kind of judgment. I'm confident in you. Last time we talked about sampling, okay, and samples. What about the target and accessible population? Is it well defined? Oh, another term I want you to know is frame, sampling frame. Okay, so we have our big population, our accessible population, and then from that we have the sampling frame, the people that we can draw from. It's a sampling frame. I don't know if I was clear on that. That's something else I thought that I wanted to make sure you knew. It's a sampling frame. And in a sample, the whole population is a big N. Okay, so the big N equals maybe 2,000 and 40,000 registered BSN nurses in the Bay Area. The little N would be the number of ones that you employ. This is a sample frame. These are the ones you had access to, and that's your sample.
Is it enough for nursing? attribute, your study sample.
So, here's the sampling frame.
No, the sampling frame is where you choose from.
From those.
Yeah, okay. So that may be accessible to population as well. Maybe. Usually.
So that's where you choose from.
And you choose from. Well, like our sampling frame, when you did your little music project in this class on the analysis, this was our sampling frame. And I told you to choose 8 people. So our sampling frame was just everybody here.
It was also our accessible population. It would be considered the sampling frame. So our N was 20, and our big N was 20, our little N was like, most of you were 18 and 19, right? Sampled almost everybody. Okay. All right, back to sample. Is the population described, the target inaccessible? Was the method for choosing the sample appropriate? We talked all about that. Based on the sampling procedures, were there any threats to external validity? Okay, external validity. That means threats to generalizing the findings. And does the author talk about them? As you know, most always they do, right? They say it's not generalizable. External validity. Okay. What about data collection? Thoroughly described, told step by step how they collected the data. That should be very, very clear, very precise. And the instruments. What about the instruments used? Were they appropriate for the problem and the method? Okay. Are they reliable? Are they valid? What about establishing reliability and validity? Maybe they developed their tool. So did they establish reliability and validity, or did they just go off and use some questions that somebody thought of? Let's hope not. And they should have addressed it, absolutely. How about the scoring? Is that clear? How each tool was scored? What about the range? Okay. What does a high, low score mean? Is high good or is high bad? Is low good or low? What are we talking about? Should be very clear. Human subjects. You know a lot about human subjects and how they should be protected. Any issues with anonymity or confidentiality? Very important, were they protected and how were they protected? It should be well, clearly stated. What about data analysis? Is there a data analysis section? Does it make some kind of sense? And the results, the characteristics of the sample described. In the results section, there's a sampling section, but there's also in the results, there should also be the characteristics of the sample described. This is where the demographic information is going to come. Were the research questions and hypotheses answered? Did they give credit to each single question? As you know, there are often many different questions addressed in one study, right? Looking at several things. Were they all broken down and addressed? Do the results... Are they limited to reflection? Does the data reflect a researcher's question? Okay, are they collecting data that's going to answer that question? And it's amazing. Sometimes you see this doesn't really fit with this question. This is answering something else. Because they got off on a tangent and thought this was fun, particularly in qualitative data. You know, sometimes they get really far away and don't go back. Are generalizations made that are not warranted? Nurses aren't too bad about that, but other disciplines tend to be. Sometimes this shows in the title, you know. They're, what? Nursing students? No. You talked about 5 nursing students in the South. That's not nursing students in general. What about tables, charts, graphs? Are they clear? Can you read them? Are they little tiny and ridiculous so you can't read them and they're worthless and just taking up pages of paper? You've seen those. They go tiny. Are you going to read it? No. So why bother? Right? Doesn't make any sense. Nice bar graph that's clearly labeled. Now we're making sense. It's a little tiny with all this. No. And don't ever publish your data. Do you want to see the data? No. You want to see the findings and the conclusions from the data. You didn't need tables published like that. The discussion is extremely important, the discussion section. The researchers should discuss the limitations. The researcher would pull back into the problem purpose of the statement in the discussion. Okay? They should also pull back the information from the lit review. Now, this new science that I have created, how does it now fit in what's happened in the past? How does it fit in the science of this topic today? Right? So they have to go full circle. They have to come back, and now they've looked at the research previously. Now they have to come back and fit their new information in what exists. Like if I were to publish my study finding that 5 centimeters arm difference is not diagnostic of lymphedema, I would then go back to the research of the gentleman in England who did that work and say, see, this is no longer a valid measurement for determining diagnosis. I would have to go back to his and say, see, my work shows that really we need to do some other method of evaluation. This no longer works based on my research, which is true, actually. Are there unexpected serendipitous findings? Okay. Are there things that, like, my whole master's work was serendipitous. I just happened to find out that normal women, women that are not diseased and haven't had any breast cancer treatment have arm differences that are greater than 5 milliliters. Right now, 5 centimeters. The reason I keep confusing volume is we also did volume measurements of the arm by water displacement. So a lot of what I did was truly in milliliters, a lot of the volume. That was one way we measured, as well as circumferential measurements that gave an estimate of volume. Okay. All right? So I expect you all to be really good at this. Okay? I hope that you've this semester have gotten the tools to be able to do it. How are you feeling? Do you feel confident? Please feel confident. Because there aren't a lot of schools that give a course that's this good, frankly, in my opinion, as good as what we give you here. Dominican finds research very important, and our faculty considers nursing research and the ability and your ability as being. We take the education of baccalaureate students versus other nursing programs very seriously. I mean, you're here for a reason, and we want to give you the tools so that you can excel in nursing with the expertise that you will gain from a baccalaureate program. One of the main differences is to be able to critique research and know what nursing research is and have this course. They don't have this course in many programs. Continuing on, research utilization. Isn't enough. Okay? There has to be some kind of a connection between practicing nurses and researchers. And this is huge. There is a gap. And I told you about the high-heeled nurse comment, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that just really exemplifies the gap between academics and practitioners. And I hope that in your practice you'll be able to minimize that gap and understand that nurse researchers are just as important in the whole process as you are, and there's no hierarchy. I think nursing is kind of like Plato's Republic. We're all equal, and we all give what we can. And so, you know, don't alienate nurse researchers. Take what they can do for you, and they will do the same. But once research has been done, we have to utilize it. It's a process by which knowledge generated from research becomes incorporated in clinical practice. This is ongoing, systematic, But it comes from a critical analysis of the research findings, which is what you guys now know how to do. Obviously, you've just done it. Critical analysis of the research findings. And then, after it's analyzed, you have to see if it's worthy of implementation. Are you going to implement it? But because we're nurses, we always have the nursing process to fall back on. We don't implement an intervention without also doing evaluation, right? So always come back and evaluate. So if you're going to integrate a new idea into your practice, do so based on sound research. But then come back and look. And it could be as simple as something you are doing personally within your own practice. Maybe some kind of a qualitative study talked about a need that people have and you're addressing that. And then look back and say, is this good or bad? Disseminating research findings, meaning getting it out there. Okay, you hopefully will all be attending conferences in your specialty area. You'll be reading reports of research. You'll read research that's been disseminated. You'll see it out there. Through that, you'll develop research-based policies. Everything will be evidence-based in your practice and wherever you work. The procedures and the clinical practice guidelines will be part of molding those within your institution in your future so that everything is evidence-based. You now know the value of nursing research and how our science is based on the research that's done it that certainly highly impacts our practices, right? Absolutely. Everything we do should be evidence-based. Your critical thinking skills, I hope that you've developed them. I hope that you'll pull research that will help you make decisions that will affect your patient care. If you'll be able to do that, whether it's just looking up an interesting diagnosis that you found, reading some research on it, or a new theory, a new practice, anything. Insurance companies and consumers demand evidence base. Okay, we talked about that, evidence base. So research utilization, again, we're applying it to improve patient care, to develop inquiring minds, ask questions, synthesize findings, develop your practice, improve practice, evaluating patients' income outcomes. There are research utilization models. I just want you to know that they exist. So within your institution, there may be a framework or a model where new research is put through all these hoops, basically the system of inquiry, before it's developed. So know that. And these models, the goal of the models are to improve practice and to critically look at the research. It's a very structured way a piece of research will be followed to see if it's worthy of implementation within your practice. So don't be surprised if people just don't take a committee, let's say, just doesn't take your opinion and your critique. They may say, no, we have to use this set of tools to go through and analyze the work and see if it's worthy of our change. Okay? So know that that exists. In general, utilization model, you're going to identify the problem. You're going to review the literature. If significant information is found, you're going to make a decision to use or reject the data. If a change of practice is made, then you need to be able to measure the outcome. All right? We expect to decrease PICC line infection rates. Okay, that's what we expect, and we have to critically look at what we're doing. This new implementation, is it working? So the evaluation is always ongoing. You don't want to implement something and then not look at it anymore. Say, is it good? Maybe the old way was better. New isn't always better, okay? What you read isn't always going to be great. It might not be, but certainly a lot of it's going to be, you're going to want to try it. Let's try it, let's see, let's pilot it, and then evaluate and see if we want to use it in the larger population. Okay. I remember when I was just a CNA in nursing school, and it was the whole concept of pain being the fifth vital sign. We did a whole pilot study on our floor whether we should evaluate pain every time. And what would that do to the decrease in pain on the floor if the CNAs evaluated pain along with vital signs? This is, I know it's probably hard for you to believe, but this was like 12, 14 years ago, where pain wasn't considered the vital sign. That was just some of that information was just coming about. It was a hot research topic. And sure enough, it worked real well. We piloted it, and we added it to the vital signs. Okay? So that was good. Why do we do it the way we're doing it? Okay, ask yourself, why are we doing this the way we're doing it? And is there a better way to do this? Okay, do this in your practice all the time. Why am I doing this way? Maybe there's a better way. If there's a better way, question it. All right? Problems are arising with new knowledge and new technology constantly. Okay, look at the clinical risk management data. Is this causing problems? Is this causing medication errors? Is this causing nurses to be sick? This new way, the 12-hour shifts, that's a good example. We go to 12-hour shifts, it's a new way of doing it. Let's evaluate it. What are we getting out of that? Are we getting more med errors? Are we getting more nurses calling in sick? Are we getting less nurses satisfaction? Or are people happier? Let's evaluate it, okay? So we look at the clinical risk management data. We look at the national standard guidelines. How long can a nurse work? What are the legal ramifications of that? And then let's develop a policy and procedure regarding 12-hour shifts. You can only work 3 12-hour shifts within a 5-day period, for example. Okay, what are the laws? And then what is our policy? All right? So, for instance, if we have a clinical problem, the nurses want to work 12-hour shifts. That's a problem. They're not happy with 8 hours. Maybe it would be good to go to 12. Okay, maybe. What problems are we going to have? Well, let's see. We're going to have problems in that some people aren't going to want to make the change. We're going to have problems in maybe there'll be more med errors. Maybe there'll be more tired nurses. People aren't going to have as many shifts to choose from. Okay, so then let's try it. Let's look at the data on the risks. Let's look at the standards. Let's take all the legal ramifications. Let's look at the studies that have been done. And then maybe we'll make some changes. And maybe it'll be good, and maybe we won't do it. Let's see. But so change comes through a system of analysis, and a large part of that is the research. Okay? But most of the time, you're going to go through a whole systematic process until you make a major change on your floor. You're probably not going to be able to pick up one article and say, I think because they say to do this, we should all do it. You're probably going to have to go through a series of steps. But it's going to start with you going to the literature. If you see a problem, go to the literature. What's been done? Maybe you'll read some findings and say, oh, this is about the best we can do. We're doing great. Or maybe you'll say, no, you know, there's better ways to do this out here. We should implement some of these changes. And you can go through the system to do that. So you're going to critique, obviously read, analyze, synthesize as you go through, right? And then you might want to bring that information forward. Is it applicable to our practice setting? Would it work here? Okay, maybe I'm in an outpatient setting and this is a hospital-based study. That really isn't applicable as much as it's a great idea. Are practitioners willing to make the change? That's huge. Nurses, I think, they're kind of stick in the mud. So have you found this? They don't like change. When Marine General got the voiceras, oh my goodness, you know the voiceras that hang around your neck, that they talk out. They thought they had dog tags and they were going to be followed around, and oh, they just absolutely hated them. They thought they were the worst things. They were just on and on. Now, it's been 5 years later, they love them. They're talking about them. They think they're just great. But boy, when they put them in, what? How can that possibly help? No, we'd like to talk on the phone, talk to people that know. Now they don't ever have to talk on the phone. They can talk to anybody in the whole hospital just like this. It's facilitate communication. The patients are happier because there's not as many overhead pages. Everything's great. But I'll tell you, in the beginning, they absolutely thought it was terrible. So you have to convince people, all right, that this is going to be good, or at least try it. You have to. It's called unfreezing. You'll learn a little bit more about this in your leadership class when you're seniors. In order to implement change, you have to unfreeze the population. So you show them how great it is and get them kind of thinking about it. Sometimes this takes weeks. And then you kind of slowly bring in the idea, you know. That's how you implement change in a successful manner. You don't say, now we're going to change this, now we're going to change this. People go and feel very uncomfortable, as you well know, right? Don't like strict, fast change. You like things kind of broken. We want all the knowledge. That's how you implement change. So change is a process. Utilizing research findings are a process. And you can be the change agent. You can be the one that pushes it forward. Or you can be part of a group. We think we should do it this way. It might be great. You have to go through all the steps. Think about client safety, equipment, time, money. Is your change going to cost more money? Is it going to cost less money? How is it going to affect the client? What about safety? That's always huge. What about money? That's always huge. Okay? You may come up with something that's going to save your hospital money. Okay? So don't be hesitant to be the change agent. And you'll learn more about this in the leadership class. Use nursing research. That will be the foundation of your change. Do your lit reviews. Figure out what you want to do. And if you feel strongly about something, don't be hesitant to move it forward. What is the process in this hospital for implementing a change? I have this new idea. It's firmly based in scientific findings. I think we should change this. Most people are going to say, really? What is it? Bring it forward. Let's see what you got. Because today, every hospital wants to be evidence-based. We want to be absolutely current. And you being new, bright, well-educated nurses are the ones that are looking to do this. Okay? You're the ones that are important. That's pretty easy, research utilization. Research utilization. Now, I have been reading your lit reviews, as you well know.